I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection to order. Committee, today we have one bill on our agenda, House Bill 2141. Anything else on our agenda?
You have an introduction of committee bills.
And some introduction of committee bills. So I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2141. Victoria, give us a brief description of the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2141 expands the definition of hazardous substance to include those that pose risk of irreversible or chronic adverse health effects, requires Director of Human Services to adopt standards for labeling products that contain hazardous substances, and clarifies provisions related to misbranded hazardous substances. I received, just before coming down, a no expenditure impact report, which is not reflected in your preliminary estimate.
Thank you. So it does not have a fiscal, is that what
that
you
is correct.
How would that be?
Okay.
Working for free.
First up, I have Dick Peterson and Gail Shibley. Good afternoon and welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Gail Shibley, the administrator of the Office of Environmental Public Health. It's a delight to be with you today, and I very much appreciate your leadership and focus on protecting consumers, in particular protecting children from hazardous substances. I thought I would start off by just touching on a couple points that you've got in front of you here in the written testimony. Allow my colleague, Mr. Peterson, to make just a couple comments and try to provide information via discussion, Q&A, and other testimony as well. You may be familiar with some of the consumer product recalls over the past couple years. Those are very important mechanisms. We think in public health, of course, that an ounce of prevention is worth an awful lot of cure, and consequently, House Bill 2141 is just that. It is designed to be a modest but innovative updating of very long-standing public health authority to protect consumers and specifically children as they relate to hazardous substances. ORS 453005 defines hazardous substance as kind of an A, B, C, D, E, and our bill would add an F to that. You may recall when I testified in front of you previously, talking about the public health system in this country being understandably and we think very effectively focused on those kinds of contaminants that produce acute health effects. If you've got bugs in your drinking water or other kinds of contamination that provide acute human health effects, we have done, I think, as an overall system, a very good job of identifying and either reducing risk or eliminating the hazards in terms of providing a completed exposure pathway. What we have not yet done is deal with that same kind of focus and mentality and systems approach to those substances that that either threaten or may pose irreversible and chronic health effects. That is, those subacute chronic exposures, which over time, because perhaps they persist, perhaps they accumulate in human tissue and fluids, so-called bioaccumulation, and/or because they are inherently toxic or some combination thereof, that they pose a particular focus of harm, specifically on children, as well as developing fetuses. ORS 453005 and I think through 525 has been on the books since at least 1971, and although I'm getting older every day, neither I nor anyone in my office was around during that time to provide you any kind of first-person accounting of some of the legislative history that went into that, except that it was part of the Federal Hazardous Substances Act, and this kind of language you will find in state statutes around the country. What this additional, what I call updating of the definition will allow us to do is get at those products designed for household use and articles intended for children to be able to make sure that those products do not pose significant public health risk. That's number one. The second thing that it does, and I don't want to overlook this in any way, is include not only that the hazardous substance may be the product itself, but that the product may contain that type of hazardous substance. In a way, as the current language says, in a way that makes the hazardous substance susceptible of access by a child, so that if something is entirely encladded or if something is otherwise simply inaccessible, then again, in public health parlance, we do not have a plausible completed exposure pathway, and consequently, the public health risk or the human health risk just simply isn't there, even though there may be a hazardous substance embedded somewhere therein in the product. So, just to be very clear, this is not focused on commercial processing or manufacturing processing or industrial processes, hospitals or any of the other non-household products, and products intended for use by children. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to just kind of kick it over to my colleague to provide another perspective on this very important 21st century issue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hulvey and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dick Peterson. I'm the Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. I'm pleased to be here this afternoon to testify in support of House Bill 2141. One of DEQ's major strategic goals is to reduce toxic pollutants entering Oregon's environment. And once released to our air, water, and land, these toxins can have an adverse effect on both human health and ecological life. Monitoring is showing us the presence of toxic chemicals that are commonly found in a range of consumer products in surface and groundwaters around the country and in Oregon. Although all of the effects of these toxic chemicals in the environment are not known, there is a growing concern among scientists about the long-term chronic impacts on people and ecological life. DEQ is placing a higher priority on reducing toxic pollutants at the source rather than controlling them or treating or cleaning up these pollutants after they have been released and are a part of a waste stream. Source reduction is much more effective and cost-effective strategy than spending scarce resources with government agencies and the private sector on managing the pollutants once they're in the environment. House Bill 2141 provides the state with another way to address toxic substances of high concern at the source before they become pollutants in our environment, after consumers and businesses use the product with those chemicals. As a result, this legislation will support DEQ's efforts to reduce toxics in the environment. So thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the bill.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, just before I end my completed testimony, I just want to explain the packet of materials that I provided you was really an attempt to share with the committee just some of the government reporting on human exposure to environmental contaminants, on some of the on the governmental oversight of those kinds of products that contain hazardous substances, and just some, again, of the ever-growing list of peer-reviewed scientific literature on some of the types of products and those substances. A quick note about the term hazardous substance. As I said, this dates back to the early 70s and really the beginning of our national environmental protection statutes at all levels of government, and we're not recommending in this what I call modest yet innovative 21st century updating. We're not erasing the board and starting all over again, but rather adding this to an already existing structure.
Thank you. Really good explanation. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I appreciate, I think, what you are trying to do with this bill. I think all of us here, I think we're 10 for 10 in terms of we're on the same side. We're trying to protect consumers. However, I have two problems with the bill that I'd love to, for you to address. Number one is actually sort of a problem, a principle. The other one is as applied. So first, the principle. I feel like actually this is not just an update, but actually a very fundamental shift in the way we being the government, protect consumers from hazardous substances. Previously, if you look at the bill, we essentially explicitly refer to specific chemicals, agents, or very narrow and defined classes. And if when I look at page 2, the proposed section F, that's pretty broad language, and presumably it is up to you to define that in the courts, and that is a very, very significant delegation of authority from us, this legislature, to you. And that's that. I really do think this is a. If we, now we may well choose to do that, but that this is an important step we will be taking. We are fundamentally changing the government's approach to consumer protection. And I just take pause. It would be prudent for us to take pause before doing that. So that is my first objection. My second objection is: let's assume we chose to take that step. And I'm pretty sure this is not your intent, but as I read it, Section F actually could apply to many, many things. For example, tobacco, trans fats. I think it could apply to Happy Meals. It could apply to many toys. It could apply to just about any food. It could apply to calories, theoretically. And I'm pretty sure that's not what you're trying to do. And perhaps I'm misreading it, but if you could tell me why it would not do so as written, I'd like that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, thank you very much for the questions. And I certainly concur with your observation in terms of 10 for 10. It's been my very clear impression and response from talking with many of you. First of all, in terms of the fundamental shift versus kind of what I, again, call 21st century updating, there is no question that it is a change. The issue is it a matter of kind, where we're completely redoing what we do and how we approach something, or is it more of a revision that reflects current reality? And the reason I have articulated it as the latter and not the former, as you stated, is that if you look at, see if I can find my language here. If you look at current 005 language, you see under A, it has any substance that is toxic, corrosive, an irritant, a strong sensitizer, flammable, combustible, generates pressure through decomposition, heat, or other means, if such substance or mixed, etc. I mean, that's quite broad language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been around, as I said, since at least 1971. The current administrative rules, 333, Chapter 16005, begins with, and these rules have been on the books for decades as well, to try to add some three-dimensionality to what does this mean and what would it take for a substance to be hazardous under the current definition. So that's why I just don't see that the language in F is fundamentally different in kind than the language in A, for example. Now, certainly when the 2005 legislature, I believe, added the E, which is the two types of brominated flame retardants, There was a lot of discussion then, and I think there will be again this session about whether or not, do we want to get down to identifying the specific molecular structure of a particular chemical compound, because we don't have enough shelf space or bandwidth to, you know, fill our statute books with that kind of specificity. But that's a policy choice, and that's, I appreciate you raising it. I'm simply articulating why I see it this way, and why we are introducing this in that context. Your as applied. I had it and then I lost it. Your follow-up question, if I may.
With your permission, Mr. Chair, the as-applied question was, why is it that F would not apply to, say, calories, trans fats, tobacco, just about anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Barton. 453.055 is the application of those terms that are defined in 005. And the language in, if I draw your attention to sub 3 there, in 453.055 says, if the director finds that a toy or other article intended for use by children is a hazardous substance, bears or contains a hazardous substance in a manner as to be susceptible of access by a child to whom the toy or other article is entrusted, etc. And then in sub 4, if the director finds any hazardous substance intended or packaged in a form suitable, etc., for use in a household, I might suggest that a calorie is not packaged and presented for use in a household, and so it doesn't really. One is a physical thing, as opposed to these are household products, not restaurant meals, as I said, hospital devices, other kinds of outside the household kind of products.
May I, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be picking on you, but I really am asking two questions. First, there was the delegation question, and the second question was the as applied. And I, Mr. Chair, if I may ask a follow up on each, with your permission. But
go for it.
Thank you. So the first one, let's go back now to the delegation question. So you refer to subsection A, 7 subsection A, and then you show, fairly lengthy rules that have been implemented. If section A isn't broad, as you point out, and indeed the language is fairly broad, and if there are substantial rules, why do we need section F? Why do we need this bill? What are you trying to get at with section F that isn't already in those very lengthy rules?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, let's see. I'm trying to find 0058 defines highly toxic, and 0518 defines toxic substance.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I thought you were referring to 057A, which is the broad language you
Right, and I guess what I'm trying to say is under the current statute, the term, I'm sorry, that's toxic substance, I apologize. Because the overall structure as written focuses on acute effects, and it is those acute effects which we appreciate and periodically we use. We don't very often. One, we don't need to. It's not been brought to our attention that that's necessary. But we tend to be very judicious in expending resources in that way. But this entire title, if you will, is focused on acute health effects and the chronic subacute exposures of certain chemicals, compounds, metals, vapors, etc. Our Department of Justice Council and others have advised just simply won't reach there.
Thank you. And one last follow-up, Mr. Chair, now on the, if I may, as the applied one.
One more.
Thank you for some very good answers. And as applied, and I understand that a calorie is not a product under .055. However, I guess you seem to imply that product has to be a durable product, but a highly caloric food would be a product that is, I think might well fall as written under subsection, under 005, subsection 7F, the proposed language.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, I'm looking here for some language that I've got. Let's see. And this is 453.015 sub 5, which says that this section does not apply to, and sub 5 says, foods or drugs otherwise regulated by this state.
So, sorry, what statute is that, please?
That is 453.015.
015.
Sub 5, sure.
So it appears we don't need the Big Mac takeout in this bill?
Apparently not, Mr. I actually don't have that language in front of me.
Well, but Representative Winger has the book, maybe we'll pass it down to you.
Thank you.
Done.
Thank you.
Other Thank questions? You. Representative
That's
Widener.
Quite all right.
Should have gone around you.
I stole it.
Whatever.
I know.
Thank you, Chair, and knowing that my friend Representative Barton and I can go out for a happy meal after this makes me much more comfortable. However, I do have problems with the language being fairly broad, too, because the packaging, the toys that come with it. I'm kind of curious, do you have a specific instance where having this broad of language would have made a difference in a case here in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Widener, if I may, I'll pick on my colleague, Mr. Peterson. I remember getting a phone call from him asking a quasi-hypothetical, I think perhaps, and perhaps you can just share what that topic was. Had to do with, I think, either phthalates or bisphenol A. Remember? I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'll try to characterize, and I guess he can tell me if I'm mischaracterizing anything. This was, I think, following a meeting with the Environmental Quality Commission, his department's governing commission, and evidently had been asked to explore whether or not, in looking at the current statute, whether or not DHS, under current statutory authority, would be able to take products off the market that contained, and I'm sorry, I don't remember if it was bisphenol A or a particular type of phthalate or any one of a series of phthalates. And that was a very good question and one that we had been raising in discussion. And the quick answer is no, we couldn't really even pursue it, which I guess gets to Representative Barton's question as well, given the acute health effects that really are the focus of the current statute.
I'll take a shot. Thanks, Gail. Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, or Widener, I'm sorry, you asked the question. I think the question pertained to when our commission was talking about how we have to manage waste at a contamination realm, if it's in groundwater or in a waste stream where it costs a lot of money to get that particular contaminant out, whether it's an environmental cleanup site or groundwater treatment or whatever. My commission was asking me, started talking about from a source perspective, is there a way we can work with Oregonians and others to figure out a way to keep things out of the waste stream so it doesn't come to a problem. I think it was around phthalate scale, if I remember right, because we have some phthalates issue in groundwater around the state. And my commission is just exploring with me is about how can we get on the front end of this so we don't have to work with parties in a very inexpensive way to clean things up. But I don't think it was around a very specific individual case where you're asking.
Other questions? Representative Krieger.
Every time I read F, I can think of more and more things that could come into that. Anti-pregnancy or pregnancy prevention products ingested by women. They're now being found in wastewater. They're being found in freshwater. They're being found in fish. And so, aren't they included?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, no. As I mentioned, foods and drugs are already excluded under the current statute in 453.015. So this would not change that.
Something is that, Mr. Chair, that pervasive. I mean, that we know that's a problem. We're working on that. But this broad thing is you can go after other things. I'm going to have to hear a lot more to convince me that DHS has the skills, the employees, everything that you need to really implement this. And I think there's no limitation about where this could go. I'm very interested to see what other people are going to be saying. I mentioned the other day to you there's going to be a long debate on this one. I think it may be longer than I thought it was going to be because I'm very concerned. And Representative Barton's comments, his keen young mind, that's good. That's good scrutiny. So let's see where it goes.
Questions? Representative Wingard.
Gail, just want to follow up on Representative Barton's question. I do see in 5 of 453.015 where it says foods and drugs otherwise regulated by this state. It doesn't just say foods or drugs, so I mean, I'm not familiar with what foods and drugs we regulate. Does that phrase exempt all foods and drugs in this state from the rule? Because I don't know whether a Big Mac is currently regulated.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winger, another part of my office deals with the Foodborne Illness Prevention Program, and as part of that, we work with local health departments all over the state to inspect restaurants and make sure that both the type of facility and the handling of those foods are safe. So that is extremely regulated, and I'm sure Mr. Perry from the Oregon Restaurant Association would second that comment. In addition, however, the Oregon Department of Agriculture also regulates all of the foodstuffs, the warehousing and the processing and the kind of quote unquote raw ingredients, if you will, that would go into this hypothetical burger that you're talking about. So I would think whether it's Oregon Department of Agriculture, Oregon Department of Human Services and in partnership with local health departments, these substances and these activities are highly regulated as they should be.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Okay, I guess my concern is that what you're talking about is more of a preparation and delivery regulation, and we're talking about the chemicals or the components. In other words, what you're talking about is parts of your department that deal with how a Big Mac is prepared and served and that kind of thing. But I'm not necessarily sure that anybody in the state's currently regulating what's inside the Big Mac at its actual composition. So I guess my concern would be whether or not this exemption really prevents the definition we're creating here, which seems to relate more to chemical composition. Are you following my train of thought? And I'm just concerned that the exemption is,
yeah.
You know, and it may not be you, it may be some future director and some future legislative council or attorney general who decides that language is broad enough to open the door into all sorts of things. I guess I want to concur with some of my colleagues on the panel that I consider this language very broad. And I agree with Representative Krieger that it bears a great deal of thought about what's possible under this language before we, consider the idea of adopting it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, I appreciate that. And frankly, as you may recall, when I appeared before you for the overview of consumer protection, I welcomed the opportunity for this kind of discussion because this is truly the 21st century mission of environmental public health. So while it might be, we all have other things perhaps to do on a Friday afternoon, it'd be nice to kind of get in, get out. I would posit, and I know you share my commitment to protecting the public's health, that this is worthy of real scrutiny, real discussion, real deliberation, and full airing of all of the what-ifs. And you're right, 38 years from now, I hope I'm not sitting here as whoever was my predecessor at that time. So I very much appreciate that. It's certainly not the focus or intent either of the current statute. We've never done anything around foodstuffs with this language in terms of any sort of acute effects to date, and it's certainly not the intent to kind of change direction if this is a stumbling concern of the committee, and the difference between moving us forward in this way as a public health protection system or not, I'm certainly happy to perhaps amend the 015 sub 5 to include that foods or drugs, period. Or otherwise regulated by the state or by a federal agency, or and somehow, again, I'd like to kind of keep this statute whole rather than disconnecting it just for this piece of it and having other applications apply or not apply for the A through E portion of this definition, but I'm hearing your concern, and I appreciate this. Certainly, as I said, it's never been the focus or intention to deal with food issues through this statute.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I guess my only caution on that would be is that the food issue just kind of came out in the first 20 minutes of thinking about this, and I would be concerned that, again, that we think about other possibilities as well. So it may not just be about, 5 of 0.015. I mean, there may be other potential concerns about where the language could lead. But moving on to just a different question that I have.
Is it a follow-up or a new question?
It's a follow-up to the witness, Mr. Chair, but it is a new question. Is the federal government using this standard that you are proposing? It's my first question. And as part of that, if they're not and we adopt this language, who will the department be relying on for the scientific research to move forward on something and make a decision to force labeling or to ban or whatever it is that the department's going to do? I'm a little uncomfortable about whether or not the department has internally the ability to, take on these kinds of questions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, thank you. That's a really important and very good question. I mentioned to you that I think you've got a couple of things in your packet that, and one of them is frankly one of my biggest funders, CDC, the Center for Disease Prevention and Control, as well as EPA. They've just done a preliminary list on endocrine disruptors, for example, and they have a lengthy list. But the quick answer is, yes, we rely a huge amount on federal standards, studies, research, biomonitoring results, et cetera, that really provide us as kind of the state counterpart, if you will, to the federal level, the scientific assurance assurance and regulatory seamlessness, if you will, to make sure we're not getting disconnected. That said, this language, there's nothing. This language did not arise from specific language in EPA or from CDC or USDA or, you know, fill in the blank other alphabet agency. What it does do, though, and certainly just as we have identified for the past 38 years or so, is that we work very closely all the time, both with our colleagues within Oregon as they deal with hazardous substances, and also with other states. And in fact, perhaps Mr. Peterson can reference an interstate chemical clearinghouse that Oregon is beginning to, I think, engage with, so that other states, and I think we're going to be hearing more about this on Monday and continuing on from Maine to Michigan, California, Washington, a variety of states now, we are all trying to deal with these kind of chronic health effects and the exposures that are the result of household products and articles intended for children. And so this is very much in concert with that and does not conflict with it. There is no template for a specific provision that every state is adopting. They're all variations on the same theme. So I hope that's responsive to your inquiry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Gail, I have one question before I go on to somebody else. Irrespective of whether hazardous substance is broad in Section 1, Section 7, subparagraph A there, or in F, does not the department or the director, I suppose, have to establish that there's a risk to health and safety and that it has irreversible harm, chronic adverse health effects, and how would you measure that? I mean, is there science that tells you what irreversible harm and chronic adverse health effects are?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for that question. I'm sorry, I should have included that in my response to Representative Wingard, too, because he very understandably broached that. The quick answer is yes, and I attempted anyway to provide the committee members an example of some of the kind of scientific peer-reviewed literature that, as a body of literature begins to develop, you look at the weight of that evidence, and in fact, DOJ has made it very clear to us that this is a substantial evidence kind of threshold, and this is not something that, and I might add, that it must be a potential completed exposure pathway of a degree, and I think I'm not going to find the current statutory language quickly enough, but I think such that the only way to deal with the hazard is to order it banned from commerce, then that's quote unquote, that's the death penalty. That's the last step that we would take. And so, in other words, the language in current statute is basically you can't do it any other way. You've examined, you've explored, you've attempted, you have looked at, considered all of these other ways, and it simply can't be ameliorated to such an extent, and therefore you must do this. The big issue, and perhaps something that I didn't stress enough, although it is certainly in the written testimony, is that this will allow us to set labeling standards so that, and this is really a market-based effort, to provide people the information when they go to purchase a particular household product or a children's product, so that they can make an informed decision about brand X versus brand Y, or product A versus product B. And it's that kind of information that we believe, one, is certainly better than coming in after the fact and ordering things kind of, you know, yanked from the shelves, so to speak. But two, it really engages all of us as Oregonians in thinking about our individual actions and decisions and the products that we use in our own home, and the risk that they could pose to ourselves and to our children and our families, and really is the front end of what Mr. Peterson was stating very, very well, that would you rather try to figure out how to get this stuff out of the waste stream down below, or can we perhaps provide people information upstream so that they can make informed decisions and that result in lower use of toxins to begin with, or hazardous substances, rather.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to see if I understand the intent of this piece that we're talking about. There are two pieces in this bill. The piece we're talking about now, which is embodied in subsection F. And my understanding is that the intent of this is not to change anything except to include with acute illnesses those chronic illnesses. We've learned a lot since this was put in about things that cause chronic illness. We didn't used to know that mercury, for instance, caused us a long-term brain injury. We now know that. And we find these new substances all the time that cause harm down the road, and what we would call chronic illness as opposed to kill us right now. And I wanted to see if I'm understanding that correctly, that this is intended to expand this from those things which are acute, we can see them now, to those things that are chronic, and we will see them down the road.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Riley, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a full docket of testifiers for this?
I do.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony in bringing this bill forward. I think bill deserves a good discussion, and I think it has a lot of merit. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members?
Thanks.
Next up, could I have Jim Craven, Jim Marquis, and Eric Hagedorn?
Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Marquis, today representing the American Chemistry Council. I've handed out some written testimony for your perusal. Make great reading material over the weekend for you, I'm sure. We're here to oppose House Bill 2141 today, respectfully. I told Gail I love her anyway. I remember fondly when she sat up there as a member of this body, and I always appreciate her zealousness in all of her endeavors. Gail talked to you a lot about the intent of this bill, and I guess our concern is that as we read the bill, we find it much broader than what the intention purports to be. She's talked a lot about protecting children and developing fetuses, about chronic effects, about household uses. I would submit that none of the new language speaks to those things except household uses. And if you turn to page 4 of the bill, sub 4, the bill takes out the term in households and thereby broadens substantially, I believe, the effect. So we're concerned about the broadness and about the delegation of authority from this body to a state agency. I know that Gail spoke to you about rules that they have, and those rules are written by the agency and subject to be changed by the agency. So they may or may not apply after this bill would be passed. And I guess just basically very broad authority for a state agency with no criteria being set out in the way of standards by which the scientific evidence would be weighed. Many of these products have large bodies of scientific studies and evidence, some of which are in disagreement with each other. And I would submit that in some of those cases, this agency may not have the wherewithal to really determine which of the evidence should be accepted. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Jim, on page 4, section 4.
Yes.
On the line 37, I think that the word household is included. Do you see that?
Yes, oh, I do.
Great.
I do.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Craven.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven representing Tech America. I'll give my little speech real quick one more time. Tech America is the new organization resulting from the merger of AEA and the Information Technology Association of America. So twice in this committee, so I'm done on that. It's Tech America from now on, and that's who we are. I'm going to be very brief because I think the committee in its wrestling with the first witness probably raised a lot of the issues that some of us might raise. Let me hit one. Again, a lot of us are going to be probably back here Monday afternoon to continue this discussion on a couple of more specific bills. I did hear the Health Division talk about the focus of this bill being households and consumer products and children. I think maybe that's more the debate or the discussion we're going to have Monday afternoon with a different bill. This is a much broader bill. Our concern on behalf of the people who manufacture electronics products and such is the second issue that I don't think has been fleshed out quite as much as the sub F has been gnawed to death, maybe, and that's not just substances, but products contained in substances is the new language. Now, there are, just in the case of the products that our companies manufacture, computers, cell phones, things like that, there are a lot of chemical substances that are used to produce products. In some cases, they are still contained in a product. There are still, in some older products, there's still lead on a circuit board, essential to making any product work. They are, however, usually encapsulated, contained inside the product, don't provide a risk of any kind of chronic or acute exposure in our minds. They're not usually ingested or such. So we do have a concern about the substances contained in products, which is the second big opening in this bill, in addition to the chronic versus acute language. So it's mainly a caution. We're still trying to struggle to see where the Health Division is going with this bill, but we wanted to focus on that part for your consideration because we think that opens up another very big, broad discussion from labeling. Currently, and for a long time, the division's had the ability to label and even ban substances, but now we start talking about things within things. It does raise a lot of questions in our minds that we would, you know, expect to be answered. I guess two other points, and I'll stop. One, you are being asked, I think, straight out, honestly, and with by the division, to really give this division of a very small state the ability in Gail's words, to apply the death penalty to products that are produced in global commerce and sold in the tiny state of Oregon. If that's, you know, your intention, then that's your intention. But I think it's a very large thing to bite off. We are also a little interested in the printed testimony by the division that says they can do this at no cost. And I think that's kind of interesting. To start analyzing the chemical content, analyzing studies, proposing new labeling rules, and doing it all with no fiscal impact and no cost, I think is a remarkable challenge for them. I've seen agencies come in here where we ask them to do one little thing and we get 9 FTEs on a fiscal to move forward to write a little rule. So I think that we're biting off a lot here, and the ability to do it without any extra money is just interesting to us. And so, thank you for your time.
Thank you. A question for either of you, or both of you, or one of you. So, speaking of the broadness of the substances and everything, and I understand your concerns, and whether it's a substance in a product or just a substance by itself. It still seems to me that the bill's focusing on whether or not that substance is, you know, able to cause an adverse health effect or, you know, some chronic harm to people, which I think, you know, is basically documented in medical journals. And so in relationship not to whether it's a substance in a product or a substance by itself, it still has that hurdle that it has to jump over. It's got to be harmful, essentially. And so I'm kind of wondering what your concern is if in fact the product or the substance is safe, then it never violates that particular standard.
Well, Mr. Chair, two quick responses. One, because these statutes are quite old, I don't think if you look in this statute, you find a lot of guidance about how one would come up and go about and do this work, about what kind of public hearings would be required, what kind of opportunity for input, et cetera. So there's a process question that's a little vague in the current statute that we're opening up for more authority. So that's part of the response to that. We understand that at some point we would try to make our case and say, you know, you're wrong or whatever. I guess the other thing is that over the years, in the 20 years I've been representing this industry, there have been lots of allegations about chronic impacts of various substances. Some have come and gone. Some have been alleged, and we have big debates about them, and then the scientists weigh in, and people say, well, you know what? We convened a global national scientific panel, and we found out that, you know, it's really not a substance of fear. A lot of things are alleged, and we're not saying that science is not important. We think science is important. Part of our concern is, I guess, existing staff at the Oregon Health Division making these judgment calls for products that are produced around the world. And I know that it has been difficult maybe over the last several years when industry people come in here and say, you know, this really is work that ought to be done at the federal or international level. And I know there's been some skepticism about the lack of funding, quite frankly, over the last several years, and maybe the lack of interest, if we can just be frank, in regulating American business. I just want to say I think there's a new sheriff in town, and I think there's a new president who said in his inaugural that he's going to make judgments based on science. I think you're going to see additional regulatory work. I think you're going to see additional funding to those agencies that we kind of all maybe agree should be doing this work on a national level. So It's probably that concern of those of us who sell in 50 states and all over the world, to have a small state like Oregon basically hold the threat of, quote, the death penalty over our products.
Only in Oregon.
Only in Oregon. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, if I could, in relationship to your question, I think, in addition to what Jim says, I think the science community looks at more than just is a product dangerous, but looks at what levels of exposure. And that's where you get these disagreeing studies. And the real question becomes, who at DHS has the wherewithal to make those decisions for all of us? And are you willing to delegate that authority to them? And can they really do it, as they say, with no additional funding? I don't know what their science I don't know what their staffing levels look like in that area, I guess. But I'm somewhat concerned and a little skeptical. And if I could, just to elaborate, because I don't want anyone on the committee to think I was trying to mislead them with respect to sub 4, and Representative Tomei, I wasn't very complete in my answer, I guess. There is a removal of two words in households. There is on line 30 still use in a household is still there, but we add for personal use or in households. Mm-hmm. So my point here is that we are expanding this beyond purely household goods, those items that would be for personal use outside the household, whatever that might mean. But it is expansive, and that was my point, Representative Tomei, and I hope that clarifies that.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, I called up Erica, and could we get Jim Gardner up?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Erica Hagedorn with Public Affairs Council here today on behalf of the Oregon Metals Industry Council and the Northwest Food Processors Association. I just want the committee to know that if I had been a boy, I would have been Eric, but I am Erica. The two organizations that I mentioned previously have three major issues with this bill, most of which Mr. Marquis and Mr. Craven covered. A, it's too broad. B, there's no measurement or criteria written into this bill that DHS can consider. From our perspective, they could look at two studies and call it a day. Three, we think this has the potential to unduly alarm consumers. For example, my husband, who's sitting in the back of the room, and our family was down in California over the holidays. And California, I don't know the contents of this law, but they have a law that requires certain properties or items to be posted that this location may cause you to contract cancer. We were walking around on a hotel property. We were outside one of their banquet halls, and there was a nice little sign, although presented in a pretty way, said, being here may cause cancer. Now, from our perspective, and say from a food processor perspective, if we have yogurt and you have a yogurt cup and the DHS decides that certain kind of plastic that we use in yogurt cups is dangerous or it's poisonous, and our manufacturers of yogurt have to say that yogurt is poisonous or dangerous, the consumer has no information on the level of exposure, on whether it's the type of plastic, whether it's the ink that printed the information on the particular package. The other piece we'd like to mention for food processors is the discussion you had already about what the statute covers for food. Statute covers food safety currently, but as Representative Wingard discussed, it does not regulate trans fats or what's in your food. So potentially what we could be talking about is hazardous ho-hos or poisonous Twinkies coming out of some of our manufacturers. I've already discussed how labeling could be misleading for the consumers, and we feel like if the department or another party has a particular interest in a chemical or a certain product, we feel like they should bring a bill on that particular chemical or product to the committee and have an open discussion about that bill. We feel like right now this has too many cons and pros, and we hope you'll consider opposing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, and I'm appearing today for the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or PhRMA. PhRMA is a trade association that represents the majority of the brand name drug manufacturers that discover and manufacture most of the patented drugs that are distributed in the United States. I want to just raise two quick issues. The first that has been touched upon previously is the purported lack of fiscal impact. Over the years, PhRMA has been a defender and supporter of the Department of Human Services in general and its OMAP program in particular. We have lobbied for its budget. We have been had a great deal of interest in making sure that it is adequately funded to perform its mission. And as you know better than me, DHS faces uniquely daunting challenges this biennium, this current biennium, as well as during the upcoming biennium. And I would just urge that you view with some skepticism and some care the assertion that this will cause no additional fiscal impact, because if that assertion is incorrect, it's going to mean that money is going to have to come out of some other worthy pocket to pay for it. Just a note of caution. The second point that I wanted to raise was the issue of whether or not drugs are exempted, as I believe Ms. Shibley testified. If you look at ORS 453.015, paren 5, and with your permission, I'll just read that briefly. It exempts, quote, food or drugs otherwise regulated by this state. That is the term. That's the term of the exemption. Drug distribution is regulated by this state in the Pharmacy Practices Act and in certain other respects. Drug efficacy, drug safety, drug labeling, those are not regulated by this state. They're regulated by the Federal Food and Drug Administration. Now, probably, if the issue were litigated, a court would determine that FDA would preempt, federal law would preempt any attempt by this state to ban or require specific organ-specific labeling, but who wants a lawsuit? Who wants that issue sort of left in limbo? So I suggest that there's the blithe assertion that they're exempt is maybe a little bit too superficial a reading of the statute.
Thank you. Question, Representative Riley.
Thank you. So for that last point, would it suffice to say, or federal statute?
It might. I would have to see the language.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to take this opportunity while the keen young mind is out of the room.
I'm still here.
The other one. I was going to have a question for you, too, and it would probably be appropriate for the previous panel. I would agree that, the way I would put it is perhaps the biggest understatement so far that I've seen or read is may have fiscal impact. But if we took this bill aside for a second, we weren't granting more authority and we weren't sort of expanding and maybe usurping federal issues and so forth, just on the simple matter of more research, more protection, more information, I think Ms. Shibley talked about part of their mission anyway at some point was just getting more good information to the public. In addition to what the folks you're representing already have to do, and I recognize and you've detailed that, on a volunteer basis or on a cooperative basis, what would you be willing to do outside this bill to provide this kind of extra caution or information about a particular product? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, the degree to which the pharmaceutical industry really almost uniquely, perhaps with the aircraft manufacturing industry in a slightly similar position, is unique, is regulated with unique intrusiveness at the federal level. We have a process called pre-market approval, so that the products have to go through extensive amount of clinical trials, and the labeling and required disclosures to both physicians and the public is extensively regulated by the FDA. In addition to that, we sponsor research, we sponsor educational fora in many, many different venues aimed at reaching audiences and sub-audiences of people that have had traditional challenges in being educated about medical issues. So, Representative Gilliam, I think we're already doing that a great degree. We probably could do more, probably should do more, probably will do more. But it's something that this industry believes is an essential element of public health.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to get back just a little bit, and I understand the concern about the broadness and who it affects and so on, but if we could get this bill to its intent, which I believe does not include the pharmaceutical industry, I believe does not include the restaurant industry, if we could get this bill to its intent, this seems like a reasonable bill to me. Maybe the wording's wrong, but the intent is right. And so I think what we're arguing about, in my mind, and I want to make sure I'm correct about this, is not the intent, but what you see as the unintended consequences. Am I correct about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, that's what pharma's testimony and concern is. I think there are other people, some of your prior witnesses, that have broader issues, and maybe that question would be better directed to some of the prior panel. But our concern really, as I mentioned, is twofold. First is diversion of fiscal resources, you know, from programs like OMAP. I just can't believe this would be free. I can't believe it. And second, is the wording in the exemption. But perhaps I could, if there are other people in the prior panel that might.
Mr. Gardner, I'm wondering if you could provide us some written testimony on this. It would be helpful just to have your concerns in writing.
On the preemption issue?
Yeah. Or just, yeah. You know, your testimony in general, if you could go back and get it for us. I like to have that written testimony, so when I go back to review the bill, sure. I don't have to try to remember what you said.
No problem, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, if I may. For organ manufacturers that we represent, this bill presents a lot of uncertainty. The way we read it, it allows DHS to regulate the chemical du jour. And if you're trying to run a business and you're buying certain supplies in metals manufacturing, we create a commodity that other people use in fabrication. I can't go back to some of our members and say, well, the door's wide open, so it could change in one day. That's why I feel like if this bill has an intent, then it should be narrowed significantly and then have a discussion of the merits on that specific chemical or that specific product that we feel like you could bring out all the science, you could bring out all the arguments, so you all could make a cogent decision about whether or not this is the best thing for the people that you represent.
Thank you. I'm still just a little bit iffy on some of this stuff, because it seems like when I read this bill, you know, the department already does most of these things on a broad way on substances that are acute in their effects. And so this bill appears to me that it's just adding that same sort of approach to chronic health effects for substances. And so I can kind of understand a little bit, and I will have, when this bill comes back, the fiscal office perhaps come and show up and explain this to us. But it appears to me that the department already has this process in their statute for substances that cause acute effects, and so they're just adding chronic substances that cause chronic effects. So it's not really a big stretch for me to see that there isn't really a lot of fiscal in this myself. But, you know, maybe I'm sure others have voiced concern about that, and certainly we can have fiscal explain that to us. But just generally, I just, you know, it doesn't seem, it's, it seems like the real only difference in this proposed bill to the existing statute is now we want to take into account the substances that have chronic health effects or irreversible harm down the road. And so we're just adding that to the statutes as opposed to, you know, some acute problem. So do you care to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, again, our testimony is pretty narrow on the in terms of cost impact, which I think it's a wise decision on your part to bring in LFO to talk about that a little bit. Our concern is the definitional exclusion and how, you know, how that actually works in terms of this.
Yeah,
so I'm really not prepared to testify, I don't think, on that broader issue, but some of your other panel members might.
Well, I guess, do you care to comment about that?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
That was a concern of yours.
Likewise,
if we had written testimony from you, that would also be helpful.
Right, definitely. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think from our perspective is this bill doesn't include any criteria, as I mentioned earlier, for DHS to evaluate what is dangerous and what is not. And it also greatly expands the definition of hazardous substance. And for our members, that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's the same criteria there that they have in their statutes now for substances that cause acute effects. So I take your point. Any other questions? And then thank you for your testimony today. Next up, we have Renee Hackenmiller, I think. Oh, I didn't say that right. Hackenmiller.
She's okay with that.
She'll take it.
The name's a lot longer than I care to try to pronounce.
Well, thank you. Chair Holvey, distinguished members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify for you today. My name is Dr. Renee Hackenmiller-Paradis. Hackenmiller-Paradis, yes, it's very long, I know. And I'm the Environmental Health Program Director at the Oregon Environmental Council. The Oregon Environmental Council supports HB 2141. We feel it is a logical and overdue update to the Department of Human Services' long-standing authority to regulate hazardous substances. It updates the 35-year-old definition of hazardous substances to importantly include chronic health impacts. Secondly, it logically extends DHS's current authority to include not only products that are hazardous substances, but also products that contain those hazardous substances. And third, it extends DHS's authority to offer consumers what they want most, basic risk information about the products they buy every day. So the addition of substances that cause chronic adverse health effects to the definition of hazardous substances recognizes what we've known for quite a while. In addition to acute impacts that we've been talking to, resulting from exposure to hazardous substances such as burns or electrical shock, many hazardous substances can cause a wide range of chronic health conditions. Over the last several decades, there's been an increase in a number of chronic health conditions that permanently affect people's lives, such as reproductive abnormalities, learning disabilities, obesity, and asthma. Many of these problems have been linked with exposure to hazardous substances. And how do these exposures occur? From the use of everyday consumer products. And in November 2007, the Oregon Environmental Council published the results of a chemical testing in a diverse group of Oregon men and women from both rural and urban areas. The study, which was called Pollution in People, revealed that every adult tested in the study had at least 9 and as many as 16 hazardous substances in their bodies. And the exposure source for most, if not all, of these substances was from everyday consumer products. And some of these chemicals could not have been from the disinfectants or pesticides we keep locked away. There is no way that these citizens could have known they were being exposed through products as seemingly as benign as a baby bottle, a new kitchen cabinet, or an air freshener. In presenting this information on the pollution and people results to over 1,000 people throughout the state, the single most frequent question that I get is, how can I reduce my exposure to these substances? Consumers want information to make informed buying choices. They know that the products they use every day in their homes, schools, and workplaces could be exposing them to substances that could raise the risk of cancer or neurological disease, exacerbate asthma, or pass along birth defects. But currently, Oregonians have no reliable way to make decisions to reduce these exposures. Consumers have no way to know whether the products they buy contain hazardous substances. Through HB 2141, the extension of DHS's authority to include labeling of consumer products containing hazardous substances would be a welcome and much-needed update. We feel that HB 2141 is smart public health policy that provides DHS with the necessary tools to effectively protect the health of Oregonians by reducing exposure to hazardous substances that they may be encountering every day. Oregonians want the information that HB 2141 can provide them. We strongly support this legislation. We urge its passage, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions?
May I have a series of questions?
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I call you Renee?
You can call me Renee.
Thank you so much. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but So, I am very sensitive to perfumes. Representative Gilliam and I were sharing that his wife is also very sensitive to perfumes. I didn't used to be. So can you explain to us how a buildup of chemicals can make us sensitive to certain perfumes or scents, laundry detergents, chemicals that women may put on their faces, maybe men too. In fact, I know that there is a gentleman in this legislative body who does wear an aftershave scent that I can't be around. Can you talk a little bit about how that may build up? It may not be acute, but it will be chronic over time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, so I'm not an expert on this, but based on my scientific background and what I do know about the immune system, it's somewhat like being sensitized to a particular chemical. So probably not a perfect example of that would be like the first time you get a bee sting, you might not have a reaction to it. But as your immune system builds up its defenses and has a reaction against a particular substance, you can have an increased reaction over time, over repeated exposures to it. Another example would be people who have food sensitivities. They might not have them from the get-go, but they have a reaction to a particular substance, and then over time, how your immune system works is that then we'll recognize it as a foreign body and you'll have a response to it. Somewhat similar to like an autoimmune disease. I'm not going to say that sensitivities to air fresheners is the same as an autoimmune disease, but it's a similar immunological process that happens to make you become more sensitized to a certain substance. Does that address the question?
That does. And if I may have one further question, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So the detergents, air fresheners, laundry softeners, that kind of thing. So it may say in the label that it has a perfume, but it won't say what constitutes that perfume.
Chair, Representative Tomei, that is correct. It will not necessarily say what is actually in that fragrance. And back to your previous question, actually, if it's okay, another reason that you might have sensitivity over time is we're being exposed to more and more of these fragrances as we progress through our lives, and so we're assaulted by all these different chemicals from multiple different pathways.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Certainly. Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. I just need to point out, and you don't necessarily have to comment on it, but I have to say your testimony lost me at the very end here, this last paragraph, when you state emphatically, but currently Oregonians have no reliable way to make decisions, and then you continue, consumers have no way to know. Do you really stand by that? I mean, we have no way to know. There aren't any from common sense to labeling to the internet to existing federal or state standards. There is no education. There are no resources, including the Oregon Environmental Council. We have no way of knowing these things.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I would like to address that, actually. So there are resources for certain people who can access that information for some substances. So I will say, so things like phthalates, which Representative Tomei was, I believe, was referring to, and fragrances is one of the things she's talking about, fragrances. People who can access that information, have access to the Internet, who can understand that information as presented to them, they could find out that way. So that exists for some substances, but not the vast majority of them. And there's no reliable standard way for people to know that that information is scientifically backed. So we would like to say, Oregon Environmental Council would like to say that, yes, what we state is based in science, but there's no third party saying, yeah, they're a credible, reliable source. To have the state say that this is something of concern, I think, carries with it a little more weight than stuff you're going to find on the Internet.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Okay. Well, we're still not going to agree on that, but are you saying then that the potential, part of the potential you see in the bill is either that it would provide that kind of reliable standard, or that it's moving towards that? I mean, what do you see in the bill that would reverse your assertion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, reverse my assertion concerning...
That there is no reliable, and so are you supporting the bill because it would provide that?
Yes, I do think it would provide for substances that have been scientifically shown to be hazardous to people, that would provide a better mechanism for people to make informed choices.
Thank you. Further questions? Renee, I noticed that you have a PhD. You're a doctor, so maybe I wasn't calling you correctly, Dr. Renee. So what was your doctorate in?
My PhD is in genetics from the University of Chicago.
So I have a question for you then, because there's been a lot of discussion about how do we determine that something has chronic adverse health impacts. As a doctor in that kind of a field, it seems to me that doctors base things on science usually, and so How would a department do that, I guess? How would this particular department decide that, in your opinion, how would they make that determination?
Mr. Chair, in my opinion, well, how when I was doing scientific research, what we would rely on is several resources. There's peer-reviewed journals, and those are articles that are published and vetted by the experts in that field. So that's probably and then those peer-reviewed journals are kind of tiered into what is a more reputable source and which ones you probably don't want to pay attention to. And so we base lots of our decisions and understanding of science on peer-reviewed journals. And then there's national committees, there's the Academy of Science, National Academy of Scientists, which are certified smart people, for lack of a more a better word, that come to these recommendations and conclusions and summations of what they feel the latest science is supporting about a particular topic or another. And so there's multiple processes for entities such as Department of Human Services to make informed decisions about what is a chronic substance or not. You're going to always have arguments and people who are just going to agree with you. People still would argue that smoking doesn't cause cancer. So you never, scientific methods, you are never going to fundamentally prove that something happens, but the weight of the evidence can convince you that it's time to take action and reduce exposures or eliminate a particular substance or change the course of action.
And so in this same realm, our medical community actually does the same thing. They use peer-reviewed studies to,
correct,
to prescribe medicines. They use peer-reviewed studies to determine that something is wrong with you, or that something is dangerous, and I suppose that you have like you say, peer-reviewed studies from the American Journal of Medicine or the National Academy of Sciences, and they're pretty well recognized for making those determinations across the country, I would assume.
Correct.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. She prompted a question, and I was trying to stay quiet so I could get on my way to the coast. So, since we're talking peer review, and you're supportive of this bill, do you think it would be wise to, as elected officials brought here by constituents across the state of Oregon, for us to give all that power and make DHS kind of the chemicals czar, or would it be better when DHS finds a problem for them to bring that to our attention, because we're a member of peers here, and listen to testimony for us to make the decision on whether or not it's bad? Because I'm sure we can find, I know for a fact that everyone who has cancer, for the most part, has worn deodorant. So does deodorant cause cancer? So, and those are things that elected officials or peers should probably flesh out and could do a better job listening to testimony from lots of different individuals.
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, respectfully, I would like to submit that while you guys do a phenomenal job of what you do, you're not scientists, and a lot of the details of this are not understandable to the layperson. And so DHS and the employees at DHS are toxicologists, MDs, people who have been studying this for their entire lives, and they have the information, I feel, to make incredibly well-informed scientifically decisions. That's not to take anything away from the job that you do, but at the end of the day, I feel comfortable with them making those informed scientific decisions.
Prompted a follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Widener.
The scientists from both sides would come in and present the case to us, and then at that point, we would make a decision for the public. Depending upon that testimony that came in, wouldn't that be correct? Because you're going to have people on both sides, because you said yourself, scientists from both sides are going to agree and not disagree. And if we find that there's 20 scientists saying, yeah, this is bad, and only one that says it's good, I think everybody on this panel is smart enough to realize something's bad. Wouldn't you concur with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I would concur with that. I respectfully also, though, think that the people who work at DHS would consider that in the weight of their decision, too. But I think we disagree on, have a difference of opinion on that.
Thank you. I certainly don't want to be making these scientific decisions, I can tell you that. So, I don't see any other questions. I appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else that wanted to testify? Not seeing any at this point. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2141. Committee, we've received quite a bit of information about this. I think we need to review it, and we'll have another discussion about this, I'm sure.
Mr. Chair, could I make a suggestion? There are three articles that I found especially compelling. One is the concentrations of the sunscreen agent something or other, fragrance consumer products and undisclosed ingredients, and emerging endocrine disruptors, another word I can't pronounce. But those aren't particularly long articles, and I think you will find them very informative.
Certainly, if you want to give them to the committee administrator.
Well, they're already in our packet.
Oh, they're already in our packet. Oh, okay.
Destin, we actually read the material that's
there. Oh. Which three did you find?
They're in the packet.
Concentrations of the sunscreen, fragrance, consumer products, and emergency endocrine disruptors.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. Do you know if they've been peer-reviewed?
Yes, they have.
I'd like to open a work session to consider introduction of committee bills.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 2841, dated 2/16/09, be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Riley moves that LC 2841 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chair, do we have this in front of us? I don't.
Should have.
Yeah. Might be mine.
Close my computer. That's what I'm
saying. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, this does not obligate you to support or oppose the bill. It's merely to introduce legislation for consideration. Any objections? Hearing none. LC 2841. Is adopted by this committee to be introduced. With that, I close the work session. And committee, see you Monday. On our agenda on Monday is House Bill 2367 and House Bill 2792. With that, I adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection.